Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for June 1st, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. House is poised to take up the issue of fast-track trade authority. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports U of I ag economists are calling for lower cash rents. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter July wheat settled at 514 and a quarter, up 15 and a half. September, 523 and a quarter, up 15 and a half. Soft July wheat settling at 493 and three quarters, up 16 and three quarters. September, 498 and three quarters, up 16 and a half. July corn settling at 352 and a quarter, up three quarters. September, 358 and a quarter, up one. December, 369, up one. Go out to July of 16, 394 and a quarter, up one and a quarter. July soybeans settling at 926, down eight. September, 901 and a half, down six and a quarter. November, 901 and a quarter, down four and a half. July soybean meal settling at $296.60, down $9.10. July soybean oil settling at $34.51, up $1.18. June live cattle, now these are last trades, $153.10, up 77 and one half. August feeders, $223.60, up 65. And June lean hogs are $84.62 and a half, and they are up 80 cents. And those are last trades and settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says an erratic rainfall pattern is expected over the next 2 weeks. Pockets of net drying are likely. The driest areas this week will be eastern Missouri and southeastern Iowa to Michigan and Indiana. The driest areas next week will be from Illinois and parts of northern Missouri to the Dakotas. Rainfall elsewhere this week will vary from 2/10 to 7/10 of an inch, with a few local totals over 1.5 inches in Ohio, Kentucky, and for Missouri and Nebraska to Minnesota and Wisconsin. High temperatures will be in the 70s on Tuesday and 70s in the north and 80s in the south the rest of the weekend into the weekend. The lowest morning temperatures this week will be the 30s and 40s in the Great Lakes this evening and Tuesday and in the 40s and 50s in most other areas. Lows the rest of the week will be in the 50s and 60s. Meanwhile, nearly daily showers and thunderstorms will impact the southeastern states through the next 7 days. Rain totals by this time next week will range from 3/4 to 2.5 inches, with local amounts to 4 inches, and Georgia to Virginia the wettest. You're listening. listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Wheat very much the leader to the upside. I suspect that traders are expecting that the crop progress report will show some deterioration in the wheat crop.
Well, some slight deterioration. We're seeing concerns in certain parts of the nation here. Commodity funds have been huge shorts. They've been on the short side of the spread, too. Today they bought over 10,000 contracts going into midday. Of course, when they unwind that spread, beans took the hit on the chin there as they did that. But talk of some rust, some disease, renewed export interest starting to pick up just a little bit, Russia, frost freeze. In the northern region, so it was a combination of things to spark some buying interest. The key in the July Chicago wheat futures contract, see if we can't get, above $5, then it goes in 25-cent increments after that.
Yeah, and that psychological $5 level.
Yeah, correct. If you're a producer that was lucky enough to get wheat in last fall, we keep an eye on through here. If July futures would shoot up to that 545 area on the speculative buying, we'd use that as a benchmark to get a little bit of price ahead.
But maybe the big trade of the day was soy meal and soy oil.
Boy, we saw some massive movement in that spread, continued spillover buying from Friday's announcement from the EPA. We'll see how much follow-through we get going here, but there's a lot of unknowns here. I don't know if I chase the market at this level. There could be imports into the U.S., Argentine's biofuel, world vegetable oil could be incorporated into this. So there's some unknowns in through here. And, the long term is supportive to the soybean complex, bean oil particularly. The bean oil become more of a world player here versus the vegetable oil market. This is going to be at the expense of the meal. We're going to crush oil in some areas. We're going to have ample supplies of meal around. So it's a nice little bullish, enthusiastic news item here. It's more long-term than short-term.
Usually old-time traders will tell you that the oil side of the market, the soybean oil side of the market, usually isn't a good long-term indicator of a bullish market, that if it's based on that particular part of the complex, you look at it with some suspicion. How about this time around?
Well, if you're bullish, it doesn't matter. We'll pick anything that wants to go up or has some positive news. But your statement's true. But that was we're back before oil, vegetable oil, bean oil became a major player. It's more of a player than it was 20, 25, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's part of the mix today. But the meal has been the heart and soul of the foundation, just the fact that we feed a bunch of meal. The oil store has been a byproduct in here we've had to deal with. But, if we're going to continue to reformulate some of these energy requirements, bean oil could be spun as ethanol as we look down the road. But, we got a long ways to go before that happens.
I think Corn Bowl's probably a little bit disappointed. They only got 0.75 cents July, 1 cent in December off a wheat rally.
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing. You thought we'd see a little bit more up. I'm not quite for sure that corn maybe kept a lid on wheat when it's all said and done. But corn-wise, the bean oil receives quite a bit of benefit, but there's no expansion in ethanol. They're going to keep ethanol demand flatline. So when you look at corn, it's going to have to go back to our exports. It's going to go back to good old-fashioned feed demand to sort of get some bullish momentum going here. No real weather threat at the present time. Ideas we have said 95% of the corn planted the first time. And when you look at the crop conditions report, it's going to be a mixed bag. You're going to see some deterioration in some areas. But for the major big states, you're going to see some maybe slight improvements. So we'll have to monitor this good to excellent categories move along in here. And the reason being is those guys that don't go out in the field, they watch that, and they'll incorporate that into their yield expectations, and that's what moves that bottom line on supply-demand balance sheet quite a bit.
Perhaps just for today, grain and export inspections on corn were maybe what was holding it down a little bit.
Well, you know, we still got some time to go. We're running behind last year's pace, but that's expected. What is more frightening to me is that the new crop, the crop we're putting in the ground now, when you look at the world grain buyers, they're on a long-term buying program, and we're running 40% behind year-ago levels on all the grains, and that's probably the most concern I have right now.
And huge amounts of feed wheat out there, too.
Could be. We'll see how things unfold here. You know, there's the hearts blending and so forth, but that's concerning through here. They're just not going to plow up wheat fields and let them go under.
How about a comment about the live cattle market today?
Well, more of the same. When you look at the overall numbers, it's tight. It's going to remain tight. We're 7% below year-ago levels. Kind of keep an eye on the export demand. It seems like these batch are caught between 150, low 150s and low 160s, and we'll see how disappearance and demand goes. We've got some good cookout features coming at us here as we move into the middle of June, so we'll see how this retail clearance comes at us.
And before I let you go, let's check your long-term bullish or bearish attitude toward the second half and how of the year and how grains might perform.
Well, when you look at the we've been working on these charts for quite some time, and when you look at where we are versus where we were, you know, we're quite a bit off the highs. This $3 level in corn and $8 beans is, you're at 8 to 9 year lows. We're down at levels where it should stimulate some world demand. So we're talking about the last 50 cents down in corn, the last dollar down in beans, which might be, you know, tough to get here over time. So from a long-term perspective, you've got to incorporate the reverse psychology that we've been promoting here for the last 2 years. You've got to look at retaining ownership long-term on paper so you can capture that next $2 up in corn, next $5 up in beans.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Take care, Dave.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at Stewart-Peterson.com.
In agricultural news, Congress is back in Washington today with Republican leaders saying that trade promotion authority is high on the agenda. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy sent a memo to House Republicans outlining that in addition to TPA, the agenda in June also will focus on agricultural legislation. McCarthy says that beginning next week, he plans to bring up bills that previously were approved by the Agriculture Committee. On the schedule for the week of June 9th is legislation to reauthorize the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and a bill that would repeal country of origin labeling for meat. Farmers have till the end of today to get to a Farm Service Agency office and fill out an AD 1026 or risk losing their federal premium support for crop insurance. The form is a self-evaluation that declares farmers are compliant with USDA conservation standards. Producers designate on the form that they do not farm on highly erodible land or have a wetland on their property, or if they do have either one, that they have a conservation plan in place to protect their soil. USDA's latest forecast for agricultural exports in fiscal 2015 shows a $12 billion year-over-year decline to $140.5 billion. Most of the decline comes from high-value products like $1 billion in horticulture, fruit, and vegetable products, The forecast for livestock, poultry, and dairy exports was lowered $500 million on increased global competition for dairy products and reduced poultry exports following the avian influenza outbreak. Total grain and feed exports are forecast at $30.5 billion. USDA expects the volume of corn exports to be higher than in its February estimate by 1.5 million metric tons. Wheat exports are forecast at $6.1 billion. That's a $300 million decrease from February's forecast. USDA has pledged $100 million in funding to potentially double the number of ethanol blender pumps at fuel stations around the country. USDA will provide competitive grants to matching funding for state-led efforts to promote higher ethanol blend levels. Currently, E15 can only be found in slightly more than 100 gas stations around the country. E85 pumps are much more common, with about 3,000 stations nationally. South Korea and China have signed a free trade deal that will remove tariffs on more than 90% of goods over two decades. Trade ministers from the two countries met in Seoul to sign the pact. The agreement includes 22 areas, including finance and online commerce, but won't include rice and autos. Brazil has started harvesting its second corn crop. Brazilian second crop corn output is pegged at 47.9 million metric tons by its agriculture ministry, but private estimates are significantly higher, ranging from 49 to 53 million metric tons. Corn output from South Africa is expected to drop by at least a third on the year. According to the state-run Crop Estimates Committee, corn output will likely drop to 9.8 million metric tons this year, down from 14.3 million tons last year, due to effects of drought as well as reduced acreage. And restaurant operator KFC says that it has filed a lawsuit against three companies in China whose social media accounts spread false claims about its food, including that its chickens have 8 legs and 6 wings. The case filed by China's biggest restaurant operator comes as the government intensifies a campaign to clean up rumors on social media. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. An ag economist on the University of Illinois campus is continuing his calls for farmers and landowners to lower cash rents. Todd Gleason has more on the reasons why.
It's all about the math, says Gary Schnitke. The U of I ag economist has done the crop budgets for this year and suspects next year, 2016, won't be any better. If cash rents don't go down, almost all row crop farmers in the state will be faced with some acres that lose money.
Right now, the average cash rent would be in the 290s. And if we're at a 375 corn price, we would have operator and land returns in the 220s. So cash rents would have to come down $60 to $70 to match that $375 price. Given normal yields, farmers would be losing $60 to $70 at an average cash rent.
That's for the crop in the ground and growing right now, and it gets worse. Schnitke is using an average corn price of $3.75 a bushel, but USDA is projecting the season's average cash price at $3.50 a bushel. Even if the price of corn goes up, this year looks like a loser.
Normal yield $3.75 price, we will be looking at losses on cash rent situations. If we do manage to get in the fours and normal yields, we would have less of a loss, but you know, at $4.25 corn price, we would still be looking at $30 of loss. So we've seen cash rents increase and probably in response to a $5 price, and now we got to get them coming back down to match the prices that we're currently seeing.
The numbers Schnitke uses to develop crop budgets are aggregated from the state's Farm Business Farm Management record-keeping service. He says the $60 to $70 per acre loss is consistent across the whole of the state using local average cash rent bids by county and the $3.75 cash price per corn. The farms most at risk, generally, will be those with more than 1,500 row crop acres. Usually about 80% of those acres are cash rented. And the really big farms. The biggest farms in the state generally pay the highest cash rents and own less than 5% of the cropped acres. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I bet the number one question you get, if people are even calling, is what to do about old crop corn?
Yeah, when's it going to stop going down, and when's it going to start rallying? That seems to be the most common question.
And you say to them,
"Oh, I wish I knew. I've looked back and and said that we typically don't get a rally this time of year. We have to wait till the latter part of June, early part of July before we get into that pollination type weather and that time frame. So we've got a couple more weeks where historically we can't shouldn't expect much of a rally. I just hope we don't give too much up in the next 2 weeks and have a pretty good base from which to rally if we do have problems later on.
Is the potential that basis just falls apart by then?
There certainly seems to be a lot of old crop corn out there, and if all the farmers let loose, whether it's just throw it in the towel because the weather is still good after pollination, or maybe we get a rally because of some weather problems and the market rallies and then the farmers sell. Yeah, I suppose we could see that. But the analysts have been talking about a drop in the basis for the last 3 or 4 months, and we've yet to see it.
Well, we haven't, but we also haven't seen a second tsunami of corn come to the market.
Exactly, and that's the $64 million question is when will that old crop corn hit the market? It hasn't hit it yet, and it may take a rally or it may just take more time off the calendar before that happens.
Could it be that it's just going to be taken cleaning out the bins and giving up on it because right now in many locations you're below production?
That's true. And the other thing to keep in mind is there is carry in the market. I mean, December corn is trading 15 to 20 cents higher than July corn. So if the corn's in good condition, some farmers may opt and some elevators may opt to hold on to that old crop corn into new crop corn. So that would keep the basis from collapsing very much, too.
Yeah, I was making that point to some analysts today as well. What about soybeans?
Oh, the soybean, it's tough to come up with anything good other than the EPA announcement, stimulating the use of soybean oil for the biodiesel mandate. But we can't crush soybeans to generate the oil. There's only 11 pounds of oil in a bushel of beans, and there's 48 pounds of meal. So what are we going to do with all that extra meal if we crush beans to generate oil? So we're almost going to have to import the oil and from other countries, so it really isn't long-term friendly soybeans, I don't think.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today, Greg?
All right. Cash corn is $3.46. New crop corn this fall is $3.49. Cash beans are $9.31. New beans are $8.81. And new crop wheat is $4.84.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. It's Early Bird Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1866, Charles Davenport was born. An American zoologist, he contributed substantially to the science of heredity, and he was a pioneer in the use of statistical techniques in biological research. Also in 1866, American inventor W. H. Richardson was issued a patent for a cotton chopper. In 1875, A.P. Ashbourne received a patent for a process preparing coconut for domestic use. The process involved grating coconut, passing it through a sieve with hot water, and cooking it with hot steam for several hours before pressing it dry. Sugar and cinnamon are then added before packaging. In 1908, John Cron walked over 9,000 miles around the perimeter of the United States with his wheelbarrow. He completed the walk in 357 days, resting only on Sundays. In 1926, the first automatic pop-up toaster was introduced by the Walters Genter Company of Minneapolis, Minnesota. In 1951, the International Cheese Treaty was signed. Its key feature was usage and designation of origin and names for cheeses. And in 1976, Great Britain and Iceland settled their codfish war. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is John Davis, a meteorologist from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as far as I can tell, looking at maps and such today, it does not appear that there's any widespread uniform weather events over the next couple of weeks?
Well, the weather events over the next couple of weeks in the Midwest feature two things. They feature basically normal temperatures as we warm up by the end of this week and stay in a normal mode here through the middle portion of the month. And they feature basically normal rainfall. So really no dry areas across the Midwest, but on the other hand, no areas that are extremely wet. So for the Midwest as a whole, the weather here coming up is, you know, relatively normal as we go through the next couple of weeks, and that continues the favorable outlook from a summer crop standpoint.
Yeah, I was thinking of those widespread soakers that go from west to east and cover every state. What about the other thing I want to spend a little time touching on is it's been a wet, cool spring, early summer, getting closer to summertime, summer. What indications are you looking for that whether or not we'll have a pattern change?
Well, there's no indication right now of any kind of a significant change in the pattern from what we've had over the past two or three weeks. In other words, you know, frequent rain events here, but nothing excessive here, at least here in the Midwest. And, you know, temperatures averaging out to be not that far from normal. And so typically, as you go through the month of June, it's very unusual to have major pattern changes during the early to middle portion of the month. A more common time for pattern changes, both across North America and hemispherically, is in and around July 1st. And that's always a key time frame, both agriculturally, because you're going into the more yield-sensitive stages, and also from a standpoint of pattern rearrangement around the hemisphere. So it would be pretty unusual to have a wholesale fundamental change in the overall pattern, you know, at this time of year, early to mid-June. That would be more of a likely scenario by the end of this month or into early July.
We don't have a lot of time to really dig into it deeply, but just on the surface, what kind of key features would you be looking for that would be indicative of a pattern change?
Well, what we do is obviously global water temperatures are extremely important, not only in the equatorial Pacific, but actually more importantly in other areas of both the Pacific and the Atlantic, and then the overall atmospheric patterns here around the hemisphere. So both ocean indicators and atmospheric indicators will tell you the evolution of the pattern here as you kind of look ahead.
Thank you so much, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
John Davis of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to this report on the internet. Go to WILLAG.org. And right there on the homepage, you can click the link, the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.